And Sean. Welcome, Sean. All right, so is Marcus Viaco Pacute, this is the end of the Book of Shemot. It's a double parsha this week. We say goodbye to Shemot. Next week we start Vayikra. Just as a factual thing, we do one of the four special parshiot at the end as a run-up to the book, to the holiday of Passover. We have Parshas Parah, which deals with the strange service of the red heifer, which is a class in its own right, which we'll get to, God willing, later. So the topic of our class tonight is how to throw an awesome party, which is clearly the main focus of our parsha, you think. But you're going to learn something. I'm always about the surprises. You never know where I'm coming. You never know where I'm coming. So we're going to show a video, classic video, and we'll get to it. This is a Seinfeld classic clip. Hold on one second.
This has got disaster.
Okay. We'll share screen. Okay, and here we go.
This has got disaster written all over it. Now listen, let's keep an eye on each other tonight. In case one of us gets in a bad conversation, we should have a signal that you're in trouble so the other one can get us out of it.
How old are you?
36. What's the signal? How about this? Chicken wing. I got a better one. Pig padding.
Whatever you want.
You came all the way out from Manhattan for this?
Yeah, I did.
So, what do you do?
I'm a comedian.
Are you? Let me ask you something. Where do you get your material?
I hear a voice.
What kind of voice?
A man's voice, but he speaks in German, so I have to get it translated.
How come you keep tapping your head?
It's a nervous tic. I'm on L-Dopa.
On the other hand, you take a guy like George Washington Carver. The man devoted his whole life to the peanut. Imagine having so much passion for something.
You know, people tell me I'm a funny guy.
I've often wondered if he ever worked with the pecan.
Yeah, me too.
Now, is that considered a nut? Because I know the cashew is a legume.
How about you?
I can't believe what's happening here. She hasn't taken her hands off me all night. She was always friendly around the office, but that was it.
How do you account for this?
I don't know. Maybe a safe fell on her head.
Well, she obviously liked you all along.
No, I would have picked up on it. I can always tell when a woman likes me. They always somehow let you know. With me, they could torture me. I wouldn't tell them. If anything, I try to make them think I don't like them. Then they think, oh, look, this guy is not even looking at me. He must have something going for him.
Anyway, I'm ready to go.
Now?
Well, if not now, when?
Give me a half hour.
Okay, half hour.
Peanut brittle, peanut butter, peanut oil.
Can I talk to you for a second?
Oh, excuse me. What have you been doing? I've been smacking myself senseless. People think I'm a mental patient.
Hey, I was dying over there.
This guy's going off on a peanut. Now pay attention.
All right. A classic. Has anybody seen that Seinfeld?
I've seen that one. It was a good one.
That's a good one.
Rabbi, this isn't some sort of sign for the MJ dinner next week, right?
Right. So, yes, if you're stuck at the dinner.
Plug.
Or,
March 13th, Tuesday.
What? Plug the house phone and unplug downstairs. That's why. Plug it in.
How long will it take?
1 second. All right. Yes, that's God willing, you will not have that issue. Let's go to the questions here. All right. Question number one. Why are these conversations about work or arcane topics such party killers?
Because you're at a party. You want to talk about anything but work.
Okay, but let's... True. 100% correct. Why? What's the definition of a party that is true? Scott, what you're saying is 100% true, but I'm forcing you, as I always do, to clarify your thoughts.
Because it's a party. It's supposed to be a happy event. And, like, if you talk about work, you might be like, oh, God, Monday's coming and I got reports due and yada, yada, yada. You just want to talk about, like, fun stuff, like games and people's lives and, you know, fun things, not work-related.
100% correct. Anybody want to add to what Scott has said?
Yeah, a party is kind of a bit of an escape. It's a celebration. You're there to have fun, not to be rooted in a history lesson.
Correct. So both those things. So the person was like, so the first guy who's talking to Jerry was, and I think we've all had a thing, when you have this person like sort of like, since they don't know what, they are not conversationalists, they do sort of like a, let's interview the person about what they do. And then ask you an endless series of questions about the details of your professional life. As Shmuel pointed out, the goal of a party is a escape, is a withdrawal from the daily grind into a place where you get to relax into a fantasy world. Or you're trying to, you know, let's before we get into that, what other activities kill the vibe of a party?
Someone getting sick.
All right, somebody's like getting sick there, sort of like that's one. What else?
Somebody who won't take a hint to not talk to you or continues to harass you in some way.
Right. So for a girl, that's the person they don't want to be talking to them or hitting upon them, but does not have any social skills and continues to just not read any signs and that's one. Or you have people who are, what's the most classic way of a person communicating that they are not interested and they're not taking part of the party? The number one 2018 way, communicating to everybody that the party sucks.
They're on their phone.
On their phone is correct, Shayna. Person's there at the party and they're on their phone, you know, refreshing their Instagram, you know, doing a quick text, basically communicating that, in other words, nobody's engaging them, so they're now going to essentially be present, but simultaneously be absent. So what kills the party is you don't get 100% participation. You have certain outliers who are present, who are not getting engaged in the activity, are not being drawn in to the whatever vibe is being created. What other things create a kill the vibe of a party?
Bad music.
Okay, for bad music, bad food, and bad drinks. Yes, yes, yes. What else? What else can a person do that kills the vibe of the party as far as the people? I'm more than the people right now.
Not be interesting? I don't know.
Well, if the person comes in and doesn't take off their coat, all right, the not taking off their coat guy, or, oh, I can only be here for 2 minutes guy, or, you know, other ways, or a person who's standing there with their hands crossed, like they're a bouncer, okay? Communicating with a whole litany of body languages that they are unhappy to be here, don't like going on, typically because they're not being engaged, okay? So basically, an awesome party is the party that the host or hostess is able to engage everybody in the collective enjoyment. So therefore, the ambiance, the room setting, the food, the beverages, very important. The guest list is perfectly constructed that there can be sort of a merging of the group into the collective journey outside of the humdrum daily grind of life. Is that clear to everybody?
Yeah.
Therefore, anything that you have conversations that burst the bubble of the experience of the unique experience of the party and bring it down to the nitty gritty painful parts of life, such as work, as Scott so eloquently said, and start thinking about, oh my gosh, I didn't do all this and I got to deal with the boss and I got to get this done and that done, or the person who's boring you to tears about something you care less about, but you want to be rude to disengage from the person. So you're basically, you know, it's like being forced to watch, C-SPAN for 3 hours. You can't leave, you know, torturous.
Wait, you don't like doing that?
Not every day, only some days. I'm not saying that, whatever. Anyways, so therefore the point like this. So every party should have a theme and a focus to allow people to get involved. Like, for example, last week, we had Purim, and we had a particularly Broadway theme. Everybody dressed up in Broadway production clothing. The music was Broadway, decent food, alcohol, good crowd, etc. So that made it a very successful party because people were there in a good mood and having a good time mostly.
Yeah, I can personally attest it was a great Purim party.
There you go. So, but that has to be carefully constructed. It's not, again, it's hard to pull that off and to have people who are, let's say, in this case, the various MG staff members who are there to engage people. Somebody sitting there by themselves in the corner looking woefully out into the crowd. You go over to them, how you doing, engage them, and already try to, the purpose of bringing up the vibe is to get everybody engaged. Nobody is left isolated, unengaged, and therefore, you know, not, you know, bringing down the vibe as much as possible. Okay, is that clear? So I've now given you a definition of what are the elements that make a good party. I've given you a major number of the elements that crack or crush the vibe, the energy, the experience that allows people to get into that new zone. I bring that up, and we'll see why I brought that up. Okay, but is that clear? That which promotes the vibe, that which kills the vibe of every party. Clear? All right, we go on. All right, we go on to this week's parsha. All right, Shane and Reed.
Moshe assembled the entire Israelite community and said to them, "These are the words that Hashem commanded for you to do. You may do work during the 6 weekdays, but Saturday must be kept holy as a Shabbat of Shabbatot to God. Whoever does any work on that day shall be put to death. Do not ignite any fire on the Shabbat, no matter where you may live."
Okay. All right. So questions, anyone?
I asked this in Cafe Connect this past Shabbat because, again, it spoke about early on in the Parsha, the death penalty if you don't observe Shabbat. Yeah. But that would be another question here. Why would the penalty for not keeping Shabbat be death?
Okay, so I actually dealt with that last year on this class, but I'll give a sort of a short answer. First of all, those who are familiar, the death penalty is rarely given out. It only is going to give out to a person who does it willingly and on purpose and after being warned by 2 kosher witnesses that if you do this, you are going to get this punishment, okay? This does not really apply today. We don't have capital punishment. And by far and away, of the 95% of American Jews and Jews worldwide that do not observe Shabbos, principally, they do not know, they're not really aware of Shabbos in any kind of meaningful way. So it's not really applicable. What the idea behind putting such a harsh, even potential punishment by it is a whole conversation. I dealt with that last year, so go on to Wayu Torah, put it in Vayakel, and that conversation will come up. But I want to take another dimension of this very short man. Again, the Torah talks about Shabbat, I believe, 12 times. 12 times. All right. All right. Ned.
Mendel? Well, it looks like there's only the first 3 psukim of the chapter, but I mean, why? I guess fire is being separated out because it's not a type of work. It's some other category of doings.
Well, that's a great question. That is the question. In other words, if fire, igniting a fire, is one of the 39 categories of work, why is that being, that's exactly the question. Why is that being separated out? Oh, look at there. That's the question. Ba-dum! That's question number four. Why is igniting fire being separated out of the 39 malachos, primitive forms of work? Correct. That's it. All right, so that's the focus I want to get to today. So the Ramban gives an answer. I want somebody to read the Ramban. We'll get to that. All right. Let me just make it a little bigger so it's a little clearer. Suzanne?
Okay. Verse 3,
you shall not kindle.
You shall not kindle fire in any of your dwellings on the Sabbath day. The Talmud teaches that the general prohibition of work on the Sabbath mentioned in the previous verse includes all 39 types of work that were performed in the tabernacle, one of which is to kindle a fire. If so, why does this verse single out the particular work of kindling, which was already included? The Ramban explains. The purpose of this verse is surely to forbid on the Sabbath even work involving the preparation of food. For it says in the preceding verse, whoever does work on it shall be put to death. And it now commands that they shall also not kindle fire to bake bread or to cook meat, because fire is necessary for the preparation of food.
Okay. So what's the deal? So what he's saying, if you would have not had lo savaru esh, you should not kindle any fire, you would have thought what would be permitted on Shabbat?
Cooking.
Right. You'd be able to use kindle fire if it's for food preparation, which is obviously for the celebration of Shabbos. What holiday does, which has malacha prohibited, but does allow lighting a fire, burning of fuel for preparation of food on that holiday?
The Yom Tovim.
All the Yom Tovim. So simply put, the Ramban argues that your Havamina, which you would have thought, if it does not specify the prohibition of kindling fire on Shabbos, that you would have thought that Shabbat and Yom Tov would have been what? Identical. You'd be allowed to kindle fire for food preparation. Which, of course, if Shabbos is also a... Now, the question is, why would you think that? Why would you think you'll be allowed to cook food on Shabbat?
Sometimes Yontif falls out on Shabbos.
Well, forget about Yontif, but, you know, what would motivate you to consider, you know, it would make sense that on Shabbat I would be able to cook.
Because it would enhance the...
I couldn't say it one at a time. Shana, then Suzanne, again.
A part of the mitzvah of Shabbat, or partaking in the mitzvah of Shabbat, is the Oneg Shabbat and the joyousness of Shabbat. And so eating good food would be part of the Oneg, and you would have to cook to have good food.
Excellent. 100%. Shana says because Shabbos is not just, you know, a day, it's a holiday. It's part of the system of holidays. So there is, as she said, there's an idea of Oneg Shabbat, the enjoyment or the joy of Shabbat. So if that's the case, it would make stand good reason that if you're cooking food to make your Shabbos more enjoyable, well, that would be beautiful. Which, of course, gets us to the next question. So if that's the case, then why is it prohibited? In other words, Shana created a question, so it's difficult. Now the question is, if Shabbat is a day of joy, if there's an enjoyment on Shabbat, and you're supposed to have good food, so why didn't the Torah allow us to cook on it like we can cook on Sukkot and Pesach and Shavuot and Rosh Hashanah?
Can I just point out that obviously there's very different elements to cooking and making food from 2,000 years ago than there are today, where today there is no real labor involved.
So that's an excellent question, Shmuel. So labor, the problem is the word work is, does not really give us a good sense of work. You know, it does not translate very elegantly. If you want a better translation to malacha, the word which the Shabbat work would be the word craft. Craft is really, for example, we say, oh, that's a delicious craft beer or a craft cheese. What does that mean? It means that the artisan
labored
their design on the materials to produce a superior product. So all the 39 milachot are really 39 modes of craft, which take a raw material and you input with your design, you transform it into something usable. Mm-hmm. For example, I have a raw steak. I put it on the grill. I got a freshly grilled steak. I have a blank sheet of paper. Now I have a poem, a sentence, a written communication. I have two articles of two pieces of material. I sew them into a garment. I have flour, eggs, oil, sugar, water, and yeast. I knead them together and I make a dough. Every one of the 39 malachot, there might be an exception or two, are basically is implementing your design on a material, transforming an object material based on your design. So the better English word that captures that a little better than work would be craft. You know what I'm saying? Like arts and crafts, okay? Because crafts, you have the artisan working with the raw materials and making, you know, a pottery vase or making garments or making superior food. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So that's why, so cooking on Shabbat, if I take raw food and I grill it, I have my design called my recipe and my various modes of, you know, cooking, and I transform the raw food into delicious, edible food. So that's really what malacha is.
I see.
So, yes, they don't have the amazing tools that we have to achieve our craft, but fundamentally we are doing the exact same thing. They had more basic elements, but whether you have to cook over a campfire or you are cooking a steak on a $50,000 customized steakhouse grill that's able to sear the meat at 1,800 degrees, so you get the perfect outside sear, and while the food the meat inside is soft and not overdone, or you go to the pizza store and they have themselves $25,000 imported Italian pizza furnace, and they're making their special Roman style pizza where the pizza cooks for 60 seconds. It's fundamental. We just have better tools that they had, but the tools are the same. Ours is just a lot better. But the production is the same. We just have better products.
I want a steak.
Sorry about that. guys, be sensitive. Suzanne is a vegan, okay? So I put in the pizza, the vegetarian.
I'm sorry. I want some pizza.
Cooked to,
I'm sorry. I want a tofu banh mi.
That's it. With a soy cheese, obviously. Excellent. Anyways. So the question, of course, is, I'm going back to Shane's question. I did not forget, even though he had a little excursion there. The question is, so if Shabbat has an idea of joy, and there is an idea of having three delicious meals, And we have on Yom Tov a dispensation to, we're prohibiting all the malachot, all the forbidden crafts, except for those that are involved in immediate food production. So why not have the same by Shabbat? What do you got to say?
Part of Shabbat is also the Kavod Shabbat and the honoring of Shabbat. So in my
But let me stop you right there. The Kavod and Oneg Shabbat also applies to Yom Tov. Just as Shabbat, I have to clean up my house, dress, take a shower, dress real nice. Identical for Yom Tov.
But Shabbat has all the other parts of preparation that come in before it. And so cooking before Shabbat allows you to have the preparation to give Shabbat the honor so that you don't have to do any of the laborious acts of cooking on Shabbat. The food is done for you to enjoy.
So you're saying that the cooking, the dispensation of cooking on Yom Tov is a double-edged sword. On one hand, you're enjoying the fresh food, the fresh, let's all agree upon, freshly baked bread. For Mendel, the freshly prepared grilled steak. Zam, the amazingly delicious tofu. Okay? But that's so you get the freshly cooked deliciousness, that's a plus, but the negative, you're still having to do the hassle of the cooking.
Correct.
So then, so an alternative the other way. So then why do we have it on Yom Tov? You make a good point there, Shayna. Notice my whole class is basically taking Shayna's class and just turning it on you guys. I had nothing tonight. I had nothing. Thank you, Shayna.
You're welcome.
Could it have something to do with the relationship? I mean, isn't Shabbos all about the correlation between the time spent by God building, or Hashem building the material?
Metaphorically speaking, of course.
Right. And the Yom Tovs are things that happened, you know, along the way, you know, along the way in history. They had nothing to do with creation.
Correct. True. Therefore?
Therefore, Shabbat would have a different set of rules than the Yom Tov that we celebrate throughout the year.
Okay. So you're making the first step. Number one, good observation. Shabbat is we are celebrating or testifying to God as creator. While the Chagim are celebrating the things that happen to the Jewish people. Pesach, liberation from Egypt. Shavuot, receiving the Torah at Sinai. Sukkot, celebrating protection in the protection of the Jewish people in the desert, as well as the blessings of a harvest. It's not a cosmic event; it's a national event. Okay, true, and it should reflect the difference. Okay. But can we drill down on this a little more? Why Shabbos is getting no malacha allowed, even if it would enhance the enjoyment of Shabbos, while Yom Tov allows that? Which in says actually take it helps and it takes away, because cooking is a hassle. Everybody likes to eat. Not the many of you like to cook. Is that true?
That's true, but absolutely nobody likes to clean up.
That's for sure.
Some people like to cook, some people don't, but nobody likes to clean up.
I can cook, but I hate doing the dishes, yeah.
I'm with you on that one. Yeah, I don't mind. I cook myself. I like cooking. Definitely like eating. Despise cleaning up. I make the deal with my wife. She doesn't like to cook, but says, I'll cook, you clean. You got a deal. But it's a negotiation. You know what I mean? We're all getting something. You know what I'm saying?
I've always liked that rule in, like, any household. Like, whoever cooks, the other one cleans. That's just fair.
It's a fair deal. All right. So in order to provide some more material to solve the riddle that I presented to you guys, or Shana presented to you guys, we're going to another source. Okay. Let me make it a little bit smaller. Okay. This is from the Sforno. The Sforno, when the holidays are presented in the most robust way, is in the 23rd chapter in Vayikra, the Parsha of Emor. And he gives sort of a overview about all the holidays. So we're going to take his perspective and get educated here. So who would like to read? We're going to go to Mendel.
Okay, so Sforno Vayikra 23, chapter 23, verse 1. The Torah spoke of the festivals, days on which one abstains from the pursuit of secular matters. On some of these days, one has to abstain from such activities completely. On others, only partially. For instance, on Shabbos, as well as Yom Kippur, there is a total cessation of everything which is called malacha, or craft, in the sense of productive activity. These days are meant for us to occupy ourselves exclusively with Torah and other sacred tasks. To this effect, the Torah wrote in Exodus chapter 20, verse 9 and 10, you shall labor for 6 days and conduct all your activities, whereas on the seventh day is a Shabbos of the Lord your God. On that day, your activities should concern spiritual matters. On some of the days described as holy convocations, there is a partial prohibition of work, desisting basically from the kind of activity related to the kind of craft involved in earning one's livelihood. One is to enjoy those days. Concerning such days, our sages coined the phrase Chatzila Hashem v'chatzila Chem, half for God and half for you, as it says in Psachim on page 68. There is no doubt that when the Jewish people conduct themselves in this fashion, that the divine presence will be at home among them.
Okay. All right, so the Sforno gives a nice overview of how all the holidays are constructed. And I'm just going to sort of like clarify. He says that the holidays can be organized into two categories. You have Shabbos and Yom Kippur on one hand, which is completely focused on sacred matters. So therefore, you can't be involved in any of the distractions of malacha, even if it would improve your Shabbos enjoyment. I'm going to get to that in a moment. And the other days, called the holidays, the Moadim, you are prohibited on basically work malacha, stuff that you do for making a living, but stuff that's part of your enjoyment that'll make your holiday better, or to use our opening gambit, that which will increase the vibe that you can do. So cooking, fresh cooking is good. Now, furthermore, it's on a lower level than Shabbos because basically it has a schedule. Half for God, half for you. So the morning, ideally, of a Yom Tov morning, you go to shul, there's learning. But when it comes midday, it's basically party time. Get together, friends. There's an idea which does not have on Shabbos, which is the idea of what exists. This is an advanced question. What exists on Yom Tov but does not exist on Shabbat? One Hebrew word. Or you give it to me in English. One word. What is the fundamental? What is present on a Yom Tov and absent on a Shabbat? It's a one word answer.
Labor?
Well, you're not doing the labor on either day. And you have to be doing some labor. You're allowed to do any labor that's facilitating your immediate food enjoyment.
Not the idea of mukta, is it?
No, mukta exists on both.
Mukta, okay.
Because it has to do with my work, so I can't pick up a hammer. I can't take out a pen because that's part of my. Those are tools for my making a living or taking my primary affairs. What is the one word distinction between Yom Tov and Shabbat?
Is it Simcha?
Simcha is correct, Shana. Shana, you're wrong. I did not tell her any of this stuff before. Guys, honest, this was not scripted out, believe me. So
I don't understand how it's Simcha.
All right, so Yud, we're going to get to it. Yud, well, that's why the class ain't over yet there, Mendel.
There's 22 minutes left.
Don't worry. You'll be.
Relax, man.
I'm getting there.
I don't understand how there isn't Simcha on Shabbos. Of course there's Simcha on Shabbos.
No Simcha on Shabbos. What is there on Shabbos? What's the word?
Oneg.
Oneg.
Simcha Siyoto.
What's my obvious question? All right, Captain Obvious is, what's my obvious question here?
What's the difference?
Hey, there you go. What's the difference between Simcha and Oneg?
I appreciate the consolation prize.
There you go. What's the between Oneg and Simcha?
Oneg is...
So what? Let me help you out. I'm not going to give the definition, but I'm going to give you activities that produce Oneg. Okay, follow me on this.
Oneg is the Simcha, is the Shabbos version of Simcha. There you go. No. I'm joking.
Okay, Oneg, to have three delicious, top of the line meals on Shabbat is Oneg. A married couple having relations on Shabbat is Oneg. Having the house lit up so everybody could, walk around and freely use the full benefit of the house is Oneg. Simcha, I'm going to give you words here. Simcha this is not what it is, but these are the tools to bring you there. Simcha, let's say on Yom Tov, is for men, it's meat and wine. For women, it's getting new jewelry and clothing. And for kids, it's getting candy and treats. So I ask you, what is Oneg? What is Simcha?
Well, Simcha seems to be focused on enjoying or getting benefit from enjoying the material that you have, enjoying the bounty that you have. Whereas Oneg seems to be more about enjoying yourself within much more circumscribed limits, I guess.
Okay.
Oneg seems to be I don't want to use the term withdrawing, but it seems to be enjoying oneself in a very circumscribed manner, in a very defined way.
Okay.
It's like Simcha is getting happiness from physical objects, whereas Oneg is experiencing joy in a more spiritual way.
Could I say that Simcha is celebration, where Oneg is pleasure?
Okay, that's good. Well, yeah, on Shabbos, since it has, as Shana was pointing out, our goal is, as it says, is a Shabbos of the Lord your God. Okay, the goal is as the Sfora pointed out, is Torah and other sacred tasks. So basically the enjoyment of the food is basically to have sufficient pleasure experiences that removes you to put you into a sort of a conflict-free state. You know what I'm saying? Well, you're not uptight. You know what I'm saying? You're not, in other words, we all know there's being hungry and then there's hangry. We talked about that last week. So on Shabbos, you're supposed to have good food. You don't have to have meat. And you don't necessarily have to drink wine any more than kiddush. Basically, you're in you remove the basic conflicts of conflict-free state. Why? To liberate your mind to be able to engage in the higher spiritual objectives. Learning Torah, davening properly, whatever it is. So you have, you're having sufficient pleasure experiences to create a sense of relaxation. The Hebrew word is, you may have heard it called menucha, okay? It's basically a psychological, a conflict-free state, okay? Simcha is celebration, basically joy, okay? Because now, the joy has many tiers to it. On one hand, the person is feeling a sense, what really is joy? Ultimately, it's a sense of completeness. So first you got to work on every level. First you start on the physical level. You know, one is that you have a complete, because you're having your favorite foods. You're having celebratory foods, okay? And ideally you're having it with friends and family. And ideally in the time of the temple, you actually had it with the entire Jewish people in Jerusalem. So it's sort of a real, not just festive, but festival-like. It's like a carnival in a certain sense without the promiscuousness. So see, everybody's getting together. There's a sense of just, there's a psych physical enjoyment, A, which of course exists on Yom Tov as well. Then you got a celebratory, exciting joyfulness. Then real simcha is really going to come from a reflection on the self that you are now in a state of completeness. Real happiness, joy, is coming from looking at your situation and saying, like, I feel I have a good situation. I feel complete. Or use a modern psychological term, it's more in the realm of I feel actualized. So that's why there's drinking, but there's no drunkenness. There's having a good time, but it's not like crazy Mardi Gras-ness. You know what I'm saying? It's not like Purim. Okay, Purim is something separate. So it's a simcha. It's joyful. You're happy. It's festive. But there's a reflective dimension to it, and that joy really emerges from a sense of completeness, fulfillment. Okay, Shabbos, the food is really instrumental. I'm having good food, so I'm now conflict free. I'm not like hungry or stressed out or full of anxiety, so I can sort of focus on the curriculum of the day. Hey. Here, the curriculum of the day is divided, as Sforn said, half for davening, learning kind of things, and half a day is hanging out with friends and family and having a l'chaim. But ultimately, it's supposed to result in a sense of completeness and viewing that this material success is emerging from God's blessing. That really is what they call v'samachta v'chagecha. You shall rejoice in your holiday. About with all the blessings that Hashem has given you. So joy is the inner satisfaction of a state of completeness. Okay? Which is helpful right now to explain a basic difference. What is to be, so the idea, let me ask a more broader question. What's between pleasure and happiness? Oneg is pleasure. It's a moment of a physiological satisfaction, which contributes to being in a conflict-free state. In America, they often confuse pleasure with happiness. And they imagine if I bookend many moments of pleasure, the collection of all those pleasure moments equals happiness. That's wrong. Happiness is a reflection on yourself by saying, I am complete, I have a meaningful existence, I'm aligned with my purpose in life. It's a sense of, it's a reflection. Now, if you're physically upset, you can't have, in other words, if you don't have the basic enjoyments, it's harder, not impossible, harder to have happiness. But theoretically, under this definition, you could be in pain and be happy. Because it's not about your physiological being, it's about your whole, let's call it your metaphysical being, your existential self. You look at yourself and you judge yourself. Am I complete? Am I realized? Do I have a full life? Or do I feel incomplete? Do I feel diminished? Am I suffering? The opposite of simcha is suffering. Tsar. Or tsara, if people have heard it. Okay? Suffering, happiness, simcha. Oneg versus, you know, just deprivation of opposite of pleasure, non-pleasure. Okay? So Shabbos has a more robust curriculum. As Shmuel was pointing out, we are about focusing on we're focusing on God. Really, Shabbos is about Hashem, not about the Jewish people. It's much more universal than the Jewish people. We do have a particularistic dimension. We talk about, in Kiddush, we say, Zeche L'Maisa Bracious. Shabbos is two themes. One about God as a creator. We celebrate that, or we recognize that. And the second one is Zeche L'Yetzias Mitzrayim and the Exodus. We bring the Exodus as well. Two themes. More universal, global, one more local to us. Yontif is only about the Jewish people. It's not talking about God or seeing God, how he helps the Jewish people out. God as a redeemer. God as a giver of the Torah. God as a protector. It's not about God as the creator of the universe. It applies to all living beings in the universe. Shabbos is much more big picture, cosmic. And therefore, it's not filled with, it ain't party time. Okay? So putting it back into the terms we started with about the party, Shabbos and Yom Tov are kinds of parties. Both share the same thing. They both have a vibe. That's why talking about work on Shabbos or on Yom Tov killed both Shabbos and Yom Tov vibe. That's why that's a no-no. Certainly working on Shabbos, it certainly kills the vibe because the celebration can't exist when a person's involved in an opposite activity. You know what I'm saying? That's where it's coming from. I'm explaining in other words, what I'm trying for you to appreciate is that if you understand what a party vibe is, you can understand the unique party, which we call the Shabbos party. And then we have the Yontif party. Each one has, really, Yontif has a sort of Shabbos, but plus a Simcha vibe on top of that. There is Oneg on Yontif. That's sort of a baseline. But you got to add on top of that Simcha. Let me give you an interesting halacha. Are you allowed to be in a bad mood on Shabbos? It's 2 o'clock in the afternoon and you're just ticked off. And you're sitting on your couch, ain't nobody there, and you're just annoyed. Has it only happened just to me?
Yeah.
Okay, so
you're allowed to be human,
right? So, would that violate the Shabbos vibe?
No,
right? So, not technically, in other words, I mean, may not be expressing Oneg in that because Oneg really is an activity to produce a state of Menucha. It may not be so Menucha, but it's not a violation. On Yontif, can I be miserable, sad, depressed, anxiety filled?
No.
It's actually a rather hard mitzvah. Because on Yom Tov, you have to do your best to literally be happy. I don't mean like you're walking around like Bozo the Clown. I'm not talking about, hey! We're talking about simcha, that you're in a good, which, you know, the best English term is that you're in a good mood. Now, that's not so easy. Now, these things are instrumental, and it's not so easy to always be in a good mood, and it's hard to control that. But the mitzvah is really, is to be in a generally good spirits, and to not only that, but promote it in others. The father and the husband actually has a responsibility of engendering that feeling in the other people, which, by the way, makes it even more hard, because it's hard enough to control yourself, but to control other people. So that means, you know, you got to make people in a good mood. You're cracking a few jokes, giving out the candy. You're trying to make everybody feeling good. And that's why getting the special, you know, for men, the meat and the wine plays an important role for guys, and women getting a, you know, new outfit and jewelry is an important mitzvah, and kids getting candy, very important. There's an obligation to provide all that to the family, because the goal is much more robust. So I want to put it to full circle. I guess an easier way to, so every, here, let me, I'll make it, I'm going to start from the most universal. Every party has a theme and a vibe. The classic American party is basically an escape from the pain and grind of daily existence, and enjoy the friendship and joy of being, of socializing. And therefore, anything that promotes that would be music and good food and good drink and a good environment promotes the vibe. People who do not want to participate or are being annoying kill the vibe. Okay, clear. Shabbos is a kind of party. It has a very certain goal. Focus on spiritual matters. We don't involve in the 39 kinds of craft. We don't even do craft, which is going to give us enjoyment, like cooking, as we learn. So that has a third, but you can't be involved in spiritual matters. Shabbos takes care of a person on three levels. Physical, three good meals. Psychologically, you're now in a comfortable, menucha, conflict-free state, or you're moving that direction. And three, your mind's open up to be able to reflect upon the big questions of life. That's why there's a built-in curriculum called We Read the Torah Portion. Why? So at least give something, some built-in, you know, sort of a template, if you will, a Times New Roman automatic curriculum. At the very least, if I don't have my own curriculum, I can even do the Parsha. Boom, built in. You don't have to do the Parsha, but if you've got nothing else, if you got nothing, you got something. That's the idea. So that's three levels. You got your physical, your psychological, your spiritual. Boom. Yontif. Yontif is a higher, more intense party, because the goal of this vibe is simcha, joy, which is a sense of completeness. Now you feel a sense of completeness when you're actually not having good food, but you're having food of luxury. For a typical average person, for a guy, fine meat, fine wine. Women getting a new outfit, if it's nice and jewelry, puts a smile on a woman's face, not to mention matching shoes. Don't forget accessories as well. Kids, until 11 years old, every single one of you would do pretty much anything for a bucket of candy. What would you not do for candy? Anybody been to a shul at an ofruf? What does a 7-year-old kid do when candy is thrown at the groom? You witness it at MGE, and you witness it at every single shul in the world. What does a 7-year-old child do when they're raining candy upon the groom?
Picks up the candy?
Picking up the candy is not the way he goes about doing that. Be a little bit more descriptive.
he just attacks it. He just gobbles it up with both hands.
He grabs it. He's pushing people. It's like a swarm of gorillas.
He dives for
on
it.
Each other to grab every possible candy. And the alpha male child who can gather the most amount of candy feels a sense of absolute success, victory, and conquest. And then he takes his prey of 63 candies into the other room, first to count them, then to organize them based upon level of deliciousness, and then enjoy them. And then, of course, tell his other guy how he got 63 candies, and he's got only 13 because he's a big fat loser. So,
not to mention, he's going to trade away the stuff that he doesn't like for the stuff that he does like.
Absolutely, you know, in a sexual culture, no different than Halloween, exactly. So for a kid, no greater sense of completeness is achieved by candy. Until you're like 11, candy's awesome. You'll do anything for candy. Free candy, the best kind of candy. Throw a candy, I'm there. And so you got to work psychologically, simcha for each person. What's going to provide that joy, that sense of completeness, a sense of fulfillment, at least on the basic level. Then you build up. Then the curriculum is the day of the divide and half. Half for God, half for you. Half learning, davening kind of stuff. And then half the day, You're basically hanging out with family and friends, enjoying delicious food, schmoozing, cruising, and a little bit of boozing. Okay? That's a yontif. But the goal is that a person appreciates his situation and ascribes it that ultimately that God has been good for him, his family, his community, and the Jewish people as a whole. That's why we had to do this collectively in Jerusalem by the temple. So a person would actually have to make that equation much clearer. And he'd have to bring an offering or two, a couple offerings, a number of offerings to the temple to demonstrate that he admits to the fact that his success is emerging from, you know, the source of existence, God. So that's, I'm just giving you the design, but the principle, I'm building this idea out of what makes every party has a theme, every party has a vibe. And there are certain things that could add to the vibe, and there are certain things that detract from the vibe. So you got your regular party, you got your Shabbos party, and you got your Yontif party. Different themes, different ideas, different vibes. Is that clear? Any questions?
I have a question.
Got you.
At the end of the verses that we looked at today, it said that you should not light any fire Shabbat, no matter where you may live.
Yes.
Is that talking about when they were in the wilderness versus and then in Israel, or is that an allusion to the years in exile as well?
So, b'chol mosh voseichem, that last phrase, that's an excellent point. That seemingly extraneous or extra phrase is picked up by the Meforshim, the commentators. And I'm gonna read you Rashi just for a quick moment, because Rashi comments on that. We'll do a quick little Rashi action, short. You get to that. Here we go to it. Not him. 1 second. Bear with me. On the basic level, it tells you the universality of that Shabbos, the laws of Shabbos are ever present. They're everywhere. The whole Moshe Tev, in all your settlements. So that's the basic understanding. There are more. 1 second. Give me 1 second. All right, so there's more ideas there, but let me circle back. There's a lot of material. I'll sort that out. But good question.
Thank you.
All right, guys. Any other questions?
All right. I had a question just to clarify something.
Sure.
When you were contrasting Shabbat and Oneg and the Yom Tovim with Simcha,
yeah.
You mentioned Shabbat. You put down on Shabbat like the three meals in Shabbat. But then on the Simcha for the Yom Tovim, you also mentioned food. And I'm a little confused by, like, why couldn't the three meals in Shabbat be considered Simcha?
Because you don't have to have meat. You don't have to have wine. In other words, on a Shabbos, let's say the person makes Kiddush, technically nobody has to drink it, and you could have a lovely dairy meal. You know what I mean? Even though that for most people.
Or a vegetarian meal.
Yeah, even a vegan meal. You have a vegan meal on Shabbos, no problem. But on for Yom Tov, certainly according to the everybody should drink wine because that's wine is something which makes a person in a relaxed state. Shabbos you don't have to drink. Now you can drink wine on Shabbos. You can have meat on Shabbos. It's not obligatory. Yom Tov, which the goal is a higher goal of Simcha, it's a requirement. Again, obviously, if you don't like it or you're allergic to it, you don't have to have that. You know what I mean? Obviously, if it's going to be if it's going to create non-simcha, then you don't have to have it, obviously. But for those people who it's enjoyable for, then you have meat and wine.
Is the implication that if you do have the wine and the meat on Shabbat, then you could have simcha on Shabbat?
Shabbos as a day is not about... Nor it would be wrong on Shabbos. Let me make it put like that the guy spends his entire Shabbos afternoon having a 5-hour eating and drinking and hanging out with friends event. You know what I'm saying? It's not, okay. In other words, yes, we socialize on Shabbat, but really the goal is to spend, have the enjoyable meal, share Torah, Nirot, if you enjoy that, you know what I mean? But the goal really on Shabbos is learning, is being before God. So having a meal, which is, an enjoyable meal, but really to get to work. Really, they had, interesting, on Shabbos, they had in every town, they had a time of Beit Midrash in the afternoon. And during the time of Beit Midrash, you were forbidden to have a wine meal then. We don't have it anymore, but it was structured that you'd actually... To convey a meal, to have a wine-based meal during the Beit Midrash, the learning time was prohibited. You know what I'm saying? We don't have such a formal structure anymore. That we don't have it anymore. But the idea is that the goal on Shabbos is a day of breakthroughs in learning, spirituality, personal growth. Yom Tov is a little bit more. That's always good to have it on Yom Tov also, but. And also in the morning, but in the afternoon, it's basically schmoozing, hanging out. Now, obviously, a person should go take that experience of sense of completeness and wholeness and appreciate Hashem who's given you all these gifts. You know what I'm saying? But it's much more of a material experience than Shabbos. Shabbos is much more lofty. So Shabbos, you don't have to drink wine. Shabbos, you don't have to have meat. You have to enjoy the meal, but it's not a festive meal. You know what I'm saying? Or okay. It's not a festive meal. It's not a requirement. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? It should be a nice meal. It should be good. Okay. It should be good, but you don't. And if it would be an enhancement to the honor of Shabbos to have meat, but it's not a requirement. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Because more about your demands. I'm having this aspect. So is that clear, Irv?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay, good. Scott, you want to say something?
No, I'm good.
Okay. All right. So that's a basic idea. Obviously, there's more here, but I always like to give the big picture and to provide a framework of seeing Shabbos and Yom Tov in the framework of party and theme. Things that enhance the vibe, things that kill the vibe, and each one has a particular goal. And that's how all the malachot, all the crafts, some have a full prohibition, some have a partial prohibition, how that makes sense. That was our goal for tonight. I hope we were successful. And a big ask to Shana on all the questions. Thank you so much. Have a great one. Tomorrow we're going to be hit by a massive...
Yeah, I won't be coming in tomorrow.
Right, so I'm not coming in either. So for my senior fellowship, we're having the class on Zoom. Everybody going to be in a comfortable house.
Wait, you're going to you're going to Zoom it?
Fellowship? No, regular fellowship is going to be live.
Okay, all right.
Senior fellowship is going to be
Zoomed.
or via Zoom.
Rabbi Penny, since it's Rabbi